welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
And I am Darren Green, Middle Edition K.
And this is Please Leave a Message. Some announcements this week. Jess has left the podcast. He started it with me, and he's no longer with the podcast. And as part of that, he's kind of pulled back some of the things that he was taking care of. So he paid for the URL and the hosting of it. So he shut that off the other day. So luckily, I was the one that took care of hosting the files, and I did that through a podcasting service. So there's still a website you can go to. The website is pleaseleaveamessage.simplecast.fm. So you can go there. All the episodes are still there, and we're still available on iTunes. We're still available on TunedIn, so if you use those two services, you can find us there. Like I mentioned last week, we can be heard on Free Radio Provo, which is just a web radio station. It is at www.freeradioprovo.tk, and they play our podcast Tuesdays at 6 o'clock p.m. So if you want to listen to that, you can listen to it that way. One of the other things that changed with Jess leaving is our phone number changed. The phone number is now 801-SKETCH-1, which is 801-753-8241. And right now we're calling for gaming stories. Call and leave us a message with your favorite gaming story. We want short ones, so keep it to 3 to 5 minutes in length. How you been this week?
How have I been?
Yeah, how you been this week?
All right, I guess.
All right, what you been up to? Anything cool? Anything exciting?
Cool and exciting. You know, actually, I've been going through old sketchbooks, just kind of organizing stuff.
That's awesome. I found when we moved to this house and we were getting everything packed up, I found a box full of old sketchbooks that I had not seen in years. And so it's downstairs now. But
did you want to see them?
I did. I flipped through them. And for me, old sketchbooks are good memories, even when they're so old the art sucks, because you're like, man, I used to be that bad. I'm so much better now. One of them was old enough that it was from probably when I first got into high school. Wow. So, like, it had some really crappy bird drawings in it and some really crappy colored pencil art because I didn't know how to use colored pencils. So, but I still get a kick out of looking at my old stuff.
I was surprised at how much stuff I found that I actually wrote little instructions to myself.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would draw a little kind of a pedestal and write a note to myself, put a sphinx on this pedestal or an angel. And I had never done that. So I'm going to go back and do that for some of them. There was also, I realized there was things that I was thinking they were recent innovations. And yet I found here I was drawing those same things 5 years ago, 6 years ago. You know, but yeah, it was stuff that I thought that I had just recently been inspired with.
And right.
Been I'd forgotten about.
Ruminating for a while up there.
Yeah.
That's cool. Very cool. So I work at Utah Valley University, and one of the perks of working there is that I can take classes for free. So because I'm the kind of person that is constantly trying to learn, constantly trying to better myself, I take a class every semester. And right now the class I'm taking is video game audio.
Like the history of it? Or
no, like how to do it.
Oh, okay.
So we're using what they call middleware, which is an audio program that sits between the programming software and the game engine. And so you can develop the audio in there, and then it outputs that to what they call a bank. And then the game engine accesses those banks and then use code to get the audio into the game. And so I've been doing programming in C#. And the funny thing is I took, last summer, I took a class in C++. And C++ is a lot harder than C#. I nearly failed that class. I don't fail classes, but I was this close to failing that class. Part of it was me. Part of it was definitely the teacher and the way he taught. I just didn't quite get the concepts
Oh, yeah.
as he was trying to teach them. But I've found that some of it's actually starting to click with me. So now the whole class is looking to me as the guy that knows how to code. And I'm like, I'm just bumbling through this stuff. I'm just barely strong enough that I can figure out how to manipulate the game engine a little better than everybody else.
Yeah.
So they're... The teacher's been out of town for 2 weeks. He had the game developers conference to go to, and then he's getting some training on one of the middleware programs. So he's gone for 2 weeks. So he gave us an assignment that was supposed to last for the 2 weeks. So the gaming engine that we're using is Unity 3D, and he gave us the... you can go onto their site, and there's free tutorials. So he gave us this little tank battle game. There's two tanks, and they drive around the field, and you can shoot at each other. But okay. Follow those tutorials so you kind of get an idea of what Unity can do, and then remove all the audio from the tutorials and then put audio in using this middleware that I've been teaching you.
But I won't be here to help you.
I won't be here to help you. So I've been helping everybody where they get stuck because it took me all of 2 days to get through the tutorial. So now my tank battle is a space tank battle game, and now I have, instead of just tanks in the game, I have tanks and I have little spaceships in the game. And I changed it to where you can blow up all the buildings in the game. Just a bunch of stuff. Just... because I could. And I'm finding that some of these programming things are actually starting to click with me. Whereas when I took that C++ class, I was getting lost. And like this part of code had to talk to this part of code. I was like, I always struggled with that. And now it's finally starting to click into place, which makes me really happy. Because if I was to go get another degree, it would be computer science. Just so I can write some audio programs that I have ideas for.
Yeah, I think I said to you the other day, I was not joking when I said I'm very analog. I'm the most analog guy I know.
Yeah, I tried to call him, and he didn't give me a cell phone. He gave me a landline.
Yeah, and like my wife and kids have cell phones, but I just... 2 days ago, I bought a monitor for when I'm out, you know, power walking, and... I mean that jokingly, derisively. No, when I'm out walking, I the doctor said, get a monitor, right? And I was just trying to follow the instructions to program it. And it may have been, you know, it could have been a manual from NORAD for all I knew. But, you know, that's just how I am. So, yeah, to me, it's I mean, it's cool. I know people that have, like, studied art at where you work. And, you know, the stuff you get in a fundamental art class nowadays is just... You know, I mean, I learned about watercolor and charcoal and oil paints, and, you know, guys learn about, you know, animation and programming and, you know, and yeah, it's kind of part of the art curriculum, you know?
Right. I've been always kind of a guy that was kind of stuck in the middle. I'm an artist first and foremost. That's what I consider myself. That's what I've always wanted to do for a living. But my family... Like, all my uncles on my mom's side and my dad, they're all programmers in some way or something.
Really?
So I've always been around that technical side of things. Like, our family had a personal computer before most families did. When other people started getting their personal computers, ours was just, like, a little bit ahead of the curve. We had 1 gig of storage space on our hard drive when people didn't even know what a gig was. 1 gig was huge.
I remember having a roommate that was looking through, like, you know, those catalogs where you used to buy parts and build your own computer.
Right.
And he was like, look, they've got memory. 1 gig. Can you imagine that? That's hard to imagine. 1 gig of memory. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, now it.
Well, yeah, like my system right now has 8 and it's not enough.
Yeah,
I'm always pushing that thing right to the edge. I need to upgrade it. But yeah, I've always been kind of caught in the middle kind of a guy. I'm really into the analog stuff. You know, when I went to art school, it was like paint and charcoal. And we did all that. But then I also always had a foot in the digital world, too.
See, when I was in art school, you weren't allowed to put your foot in the digital world. Because in the fine arts department, there were guys that were kind of philosophically in the fine art department. They kind of, I don't know. To them, there was sort of a nobility to being a Luddite.
Right.
But they also, you know, emphasized traditional stuff. And on the other side, there was the graphic design and illustration department stuff. But the departments were very separated I mean, it was so separated. You know, we used to joke. I mean, I knew people that tried to get into computer classes. You know, they would try to go in and add the class. And the joke was, well, if anyone comes in who's blind and has no hands, we're going to let them into the class before you. Because, you know, you're a fine art mate. And I heard recently that there was a point where they put the departments together. They conjoined them and operated that way for, I don't know, 15 years or something like that. And then recently they went ahead and divided them again. You know, I guess it's just too, but I kind of feel like art is art. You know, I
don't... That's how I've always felt. But, you know, I've always been pegged as a commercial artist, which, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I want to make money with my art. That's always been my goal. But yeah, I've never been a fine artist. I appreciate fine art sometimes.
I kind of object to vision.
I do too. I don't. For me, art is art, and just however you sell it is however you sell it.
Yeah.
And I don't get the guys that, oh, I do my art, but I'm never going to sell it. How are you going to live?
Yeah. And
if that's your skill, market it, man. Market it.
I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. Okay, try to picture all you people out in radio land. You know, the idea of two paths, and one is, say, more commercial art, and one is more fine art. And I like to think that sometimes when things go correctly, those two paths kind of bow closer to each other and kind of touch, maybe even overlap. Is that weird?
It's the same skills either way.
It is. And to me, it's weird that... To me, it's just downright weird that people, first of all, discount art in general. And then once you get amongst the artists, we should be each other's greatest allies. And yet there's such a division between, you know, for example, digital art and, you know, and say oil painting. Or, you know, I had a friend a while back that she was teaching watercolor at a local university and she got laid off. And when they called her in to give her the boot, the dean said, well, we're thinking we want to focus more on real art. She taught watercolor. Somehow watercolor wasn't
real art. That's odd.
You know, and I still hear people talking about how whether or not photography is art. Really? We're coming up on 200 years of photography and we're still having this discussion.
Every new medium we have that discussion. Are video games art? Well, yes, of course they are.
I mean, you know, and then even, you know, people, they kind of scowl. Oh, your husband's an artist? You know, show me a facet of your life that doesn't have art in it. You know, the clothes, you know, you're wearing, the stuff you're watching on the screen. The movies
you sit and veg out in front of every day.
Yeah, you know, the stuff you're reading. I mean, we're surrounded by art, and yet people think of it as not useful and disposable, and yet it's everywhere. You know, it's like saying air is not that important, but yeah, granted.
Exercise the devil! In a destiny.
Touch me. You're one of them. Touch me. Touch me. You're one of them. Touch me. One of them! You're one of them! A devil! No! Lies!
gave his signal.
Destroy the world!
So was that?
Would you like a little background?
Was that the actual song, or was that like the dance remix of another song?
That was a dance remix of two songs.
Okay,
that had no right being mashed up together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I was listening to it and thinking dance remix, 12-inch single, 1980s.
So what that was, I was telling you a little bit earlier about Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds, which is one of my all-time favorite albums. I think it's either this or Sgt. Pepper, and it's like...
Really?
Yeah.
You put it on that level?
Yeah.
Wow.
The two of them, those two albums just speak to me. So what it is Jeff Wayne did a musical version of The War of the Worlds, and it's a very well-told story.
That was kind of a British thing for a while, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Because I had...
I
will confess, I had a copy of Rick Wakeman, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and then there was...
King Arthur, Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, I think that's the one I had.
And then I've also got...
Yeah, see?
Six Wives of Henry VIII.
I think there was a period where if you wanted to be weirder than British progressive rock, then you had to start doing musical versions of classic literature. I think it was probably a uniquely British thing because I can't think of any American bands doing something similar.
I don't know.
There might have been some obscure references on a Rush album, but it wasn't like we're going to do War of the Worlds.
Yeah. So this is a prog rock version. Richard Burton is the voice of the narrator, and Justin Hayward's also in it. You might even know some of those names better than I do. Yeah, just the first time I heard that album, it just spoke to me. So
David Essex. And we were just talking about this a minute ago. Phil Lynott's on this record, singer and bass player for Thin Lizzy.
Right, and so he's the voice of the preacher.
Cool.
So,
and who'd you say? You said Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Catherine Zeta-Jones was the female voice in that song we just listened to. So years later, I've loved this album since I first heard it. I've listened to it hundreds of times. I own a stack of this record. I have the original vinyl. I've got it on CD. I've got it on Blu-ray. I've got it on Super Audio CD. I've got it on DVD. I've got it on cassette tape. I've got it on 8-track. And I've got all kinds of remixes and all kinds of just anything that was related to this album I have, because I just love it that much. So years, and my biggest complaint every time I finished listening to it was that I wanted to listen to something like it that wasn't it. And I have not been able to find anything that compared. The Rick Wakeman, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and all that stuff that you were just talking about, it doesn't even come close to the quality of this. This just is so wonderful. And so years after he did this, Jeff Wayne did a musical version of Spartacus, which was not the commercial success that the War of the Worlds one was.
I'm trying to imagine it. Is there a dance remix? I am Spartacus.
Anthony Hopkins is the main character in that one. Catherine Zeta-Jones, this was kind of one of the first things she did, was she's the voice of Feline in this. And so when this came out, what we just listened to was kind of one of their marketing ploys. They mashed up a song from the Spartacus and from the War of the Worlds.
Oh, okay.
And they really had no right to be mixed together because they just didn't make sense. So that song is called The Spirit of Destiny. It's the Parson, which was played by Phil Lynott, and Feline, who was played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. And it was just a dance mix of those two things. So it's just kind of weird.
There's, it was weird.
No reason to mix those two songs. No reason to mix those two stories. They don't really even make sense together. But there it is.
But it's the same guy wrote them both, right?
Yeah, the same guy wrote them both.
So, you know, if he's doing it, then cool. If this was some kid on the internet who does dance remixes in his bedroom, I might question his judgment then. But hey.
What was funny is the first time I heard this song, I was really confused by it because I know the War of the Worlds inside, outside, upside down, and backwards. You know, I hear part of it, I know it. And so when I first heard this, I was listening to remixes from the War of the Worlds, and this one came on. I'm like, wait a minute. They've got something else mixed in there, but it was before I had gotten my hands on the Spartacus album, and so I hadn't never even heard that.
I see, I'm seeing here Ladysmith Black Mambazo is in this. That's cool, too.
Yeah. It's really cool. The first time I listened to it, I put it on, and I was really excited because I'm like, okay, finally an album that when I'm done listening to the War of the Worlds and I'm in the mood for that kind of storytelling, I have something else I can finally put on. And I listened to it, and the first time I listened to it, I can see why it wasn't an instant hit.
Yeah.
Because it just, it was done years later. And so obviously as a musician, he's matured and he's learned new things. There's different stuff that's popular and new. And so there's kind of a different stuff going on just musically in the world. And so it doesn't have that exact kind of feeling to it as the War of the Worlds does. But as I've listened to it a few times, I've started to see the parts. The stuff that I like in the War of the Worlds is in it. It's there. It just doesn't grab you as immediately. So I had to listen to it a few times, and then I started to, oh, okay, I get it. I get what's going on. Okay, I understand now. And it's really kind of grown on me, and I really do like it now.
See, I'm looking at the closer I look, the more British this gets. I'm looking at the book that came with the CD for Spartacus, and it has Fish, the former lead singer of Marillion. That is so British, so European. Have you ever heard of them?
I haven't.
It's one of those bands that never made it in the U.S., but they're, you know, they probably had a good 10 years or more where they were rock gods in Europe. And you've got Chris Thompson, former lead singer of Manfred Mann. Like we already said, Ladysmith Black Mambazo. But then we have Bill Fredericks, former lead singer for the Drifters. That's to me is, yeah, let's get British prog rock guys and put them with an American doo-wop guy. It's definitely experimental.
But it really is. You listen to it a few times and it'll grabbed me probably just as much as, I enjoyed just as much as I do the War of the Worlds, but it didn't like grab me initially. But I do really, really like it. But it's, like I said, it took me years to find a copy just because it was just so, it just wasn't as big a hit.
Well, was it a movie? Was it a stage play? What was it?
It was a prog rock album.
It was just a prog rock album.
It was just a prog rock album. The War of the Worlds became a live show. So what happened was it was big in the UK. And so in the late 90s, they did a video game.
Really?
Yeah.
So did they try to like reunite some of the original cast?
Well, that's where a lot of the music remixes came from. Because they had all these guys that were big in the music in the dance club scene do these remixes. And it was kind of the soundtrack for the video game. And because Jeff Wayne was getting these people back together to do like some music stuff, he'd always had this dream of doing a stage production of this. So in 2006, they prepared and did this giant, massive stage show. So they had the full orchestra, the full rock band. Then they had actors playing all the parts. They got as many of the original people back as they could. Some of them, they got the original people, but they played a different part than they did originally.
Oh, really?
Richard Burton was dead at this point, and so they sculpted a giant head of Richard Burton that's suspended above the stage, and then they projected onto it animation so it looked like he was talking.
Oh, wow.
So as he narrated, he was up there just as a floating head, and they had this giant 100-foot animation wall where they projected pre-recorded video and animation stuff. And
so was this a... How long of an engagement are we talking
about? Well, here's the thing. They thought it was going to be one show. It sold out immediately. Like, as soon as tickets went on sale, it sold out. And so they're, well, let's do another show. And ended up touring for 7 years.
7 years. But you're saying this is, was this big in Europe, or was it just big in England?
In Europe. But
okay, that makes more sense.
But specifically in England. I mean, it's on the UK top 40 still to this day. Of all time selling records, it's still on the top 40 over in the UK. But they toured all over Europe, and they toured for 7 years doing this live show.
And did it have all the famous people in it the whole time?
Well, what they did was they ended up retooling at some point, and that's what this is. This is the new version. So in the new version, you have, instead of Richard Burton, you have Liam Neeson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so they got new people and some of the old people. And so they toured with this version for part of it. So, and I've got that album too, the Liam Neeson version. And the first time I listened to that, I was just like, what is this? Because they changed some things, but that version has also grown on me.
Wow, that's crazy that it's such a big cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, like literally 7 years.
And I've never heard of it.
7 years it toured, sold out audiences.
Okay, how did you hear about it at first?
I found out, I had the album, the records and the tapes and stuff. And
I mean, there was at some point there was, you'd never heard of this display. How did you first hear about it?
So the live, that's what I'm saying. I had this stuff, and I found out it was when I was getting into surround sound heavily. And I found out the 20th anniversary edition was released on Super Audio CD, and they had remixed it in 5.1 Dolby surround sound. And so when I was tracking down a copy of this, I came across the fact that there was a stage play. Yeah. And I had literally just found out 2 months after they did the last show.
But how did you find out about this when it was just, you know, a progressive rock album? How'd you know it existed?
I literally just found it at the library when I was in junior high on cassette tape.
That's funny.
And I loved it immediately, and I made a copy because it was cassette tape, and I wanted to be able to, because it's two tapes, but I didn't want to have to carry around two tapes when I was like at school and sneaking my Walkman by running the earbuds up into my hand and just pretending to pay attention in class and just listening to whatever. So I took a 120-minute tape and I spliced extra tape onto it so that so I could fit the whole thing on one cassette tape.
What a pain, analog sound. You have 1,000 songs and a device smaller than the tape you used to have.
Right.
Among my personal acquaintances, you win the prize for obscure audio and your devotion to it.
Well, this one is, I probably have more copies of this than anything.
Do you have anything truly strange? Do you have like the Russian version of the album or anything weird like that?
Okay, so one of the main themes, one of the main theme songs in this is called Forever Autumn. I wouldn't say it's the love song of it, but it's just kind of, it's the more kind of flowy, slow song from it. And it's just kind of the, during one of the more melancholy parts of the story. I mean, it's a scary story to begin with, but during kind of the melancholy part where he's just kind of like, oh, everybody I know is being killed. And she escapes across the ocean in the steamer that just barely got away. And so there's just this Forever Autumn song. But the theme from that was actually another song that Jeff Wayne had written, and he just kind of adapted it for this when he wrote this. And it was originally a Lego, music from a Lego commercial.
Really?
Yeah. And I tracked down some of the old, I don't have the Lego commercial, but I have the Forever Autumn before it was part of this. It was that song. So he wrote his Lego commercial, then he wrote lyrics for it, and some band recorded it and put out a single on this weird obscure label, and I have that album.
And you have that. That's funny.
I tracked that album down. So
Yeah, you win the prize.
I have the video game too, and it's still in the shrink wrap, because by the time I got my hands on it, I don't think I've got a computer that'll run it. It's so old.
Well, now you need to get a computer that will run it.
I've probably, that one under there might. It's old enough, but it's got a sick copy of Windows, and I haven't dug it out for years to even try booting it up. But I bet if I dug that one out, it would work.
That's crazy.
This week's interview is with Talia Bitter, a friend of my wife's.
Is that spelled B-I-T-T-E-R?
It is.
It sounds like the kind of name that school teachers would hassle you about.
Probably, especially the German teacher.
Expect you to attitude.
All right. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Okay. Let's just start out. Tell us your name and what you do.
All right. Well, my name is Talia Bitter, and I do a lot of things. Watch Netflix, mostly. I fancy myself a writer and a singer, and yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Tell us what your earliest memory is.
So I was trying to think about this, and I have a lot of just like weird flashes from my really early childhood. It's silly or interesting one is I was coming out of the store with my mom, and I must have been maybe like one and a half, two, and someone had given me a balloon, and I let go of it, and it flew away, and I was just really sad, and my mom was like, well, that's what happens when you let go of your balloon. And so, yeah, and then a couple years later, we had moved to Massachusetts, and I saw like a red balloon in the sky, and I like thought it was my balloon. So yeah.
Nice. So tell us a story from your childhood that has influenced your life, maybe something you haven't shared a lot.
So something that I don't share a lot is when my youngest sister passed away. I was 10 years old, and she died of SIDS, and it was early in the morning that they took her away to the hospital, but I was actually awake for it. And so it's like really sad, and I don't tell a lot of people, but I feel like it's really influenced my life and kind of the way I see the world, I guess, just because I learned at a really young age that everything's not like happy. But I learned that there are ups and downs, and it's it influenced probably my first piece of writing that I did a couple years later. And so yeah, I think as sad as it was and as awful as it was, it's really definitely one of those moments that really sticks out in my childhood that kind of was a pivotal time for me, I think.
So share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
I couldn't think of one specific song, but my earliest memories of listening to music, and probably like the first time I can remember listening to music, is listening to the Beatles with my dad. And I've always loved the Beatles, and like I said, that was like the first kind of music I was introduced to, and it's what I remember always listening to and always singing along to. And my dad showed us The Yellow Submarine and Help and A Hard Day's Night. And it's funny singing along to the songs now, but then listening to them as I'm an adult and finding new meaning in them, but still remembering those happy times. And I would say probably I get my creative flow the most when I'm listening to like Paperback Writer or any other song. It just kind of gets my juices flowing, and it's just, I just like love their music, and I love what they've been able to inspire and across the universe, and just what people have taken from it and been able to create with their influence, I think is amazing.
Got to love the Beatles. Yeah, I've got Help, Hard Day's Night,
yeah.
Yellow Submarine, and Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh yes, I love
right
it.
Right there. Apparently, there are certain copies of the U.S. pressing mono of Sgt. Pepper.
Really?
That fluoresce under blacklight.
What?
And nobody knows why.
Ooh.
It's like this mystery as to why it does it.
I love it.
Like, I was looking online trying to, because there was an article I read about it, and I was trying to figure out which mono pressing it was, because I want to try and find a copy for myself, because that's my favorite album, is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
I love it.
Look at that.
Yeah. It's, I know. I love the movie that they made, too, with the Bee Gees.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've got that soundtrack, too.
It's like so bad it's good.
Exactly. Yep.
It's so awesome.
Some of the songs aren't too bad on it.
No, yeah. Oh Darling is bad by the Bee Gees, but like Aerosmith was pretty good.
Come Together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is
like,
good.
That was good.
And then the one I really like is Maxwell Silverhammer.
Oh,
Steve
yeah.
Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah.
So, and Alice Cooper. Such a good movie.
Yeah, I'd heard horrible, horrible, horrible things about it. And I bought that album, like I didn't even know it existed till I bought that album.
Oh,
and I was
man.
Like, what is this?
It's a treasure.
And so I found the movie. I found the library had it.
Oh, nice.
And so I got it at the library and I watched it. And I'm like, this isn't as bad as people were saying. It's got some bad parts, certainly. But like, but overall, I felt it was watchable.
Exactly. We have it on DVD.
Share with us another piece of media that's been highly influential in your life. And this is anything. A movie, cartoon, comic book, another song, a painting, a game. Just any kind of media. Something that's been influential to you.
There were like a bunch of things that came to mind when I was thinking about this question. A lot of literature has been really influential. And I love movies. So there's like so many movies that I can name. But one of the biggest things I think is kind of social media and the kind of YouTube movement of like the vlogger and that medium of communication and art, because it makes it seem really attainable. Like these regular people just like me are writing books and influencing people and doing all these things, and it kind of makes it more real. Like it's something that I could actually achieve and attain in my life. Not that it's easy at all, but they just make it seem a lot more reachable, I guess. So I feel like that has kind of influenced, I guess, my goals and how I see where I want my life to be. And yeah.
Cool. Is there any particular
person that's been... I was trying to think about that. I kind of go through... Colleen Ballinger is a huge one. She does this character called Miranda Sings, and you've probably heard of it. Uh-huh. And so being a singer, like, it's really funny, and I can really relate to it. And then I also really like Shane Dawson, and he's done a ton of stuff. He makes movies, he makes music videos, and it's all just through his business that he's been able to build, and it's just so cool to see how these people can just do these things for themselves and they don't have to go through a studio or get a record deal or stuff like that. So like that's why I think musicians like Peter Hollins or Sam Shuey or Kurt and filmmakers like Kurt Schneider are so cool too, because they've just been doing it all through the internet and they've been able to build this brand and this career for themselves, and that's so cool to me. So, yeah.
Awesome. So, Talia, tell us about your passion and why you do it.
So, I have kind of like two passions. So one of my passions is music and singing, and I have just always really loved it. It's always been something, and I love performing, but also singing is something that I've really loved doing by myself and not for others. And I struggle with anxiety, and so it's kind of cool to just be in a practice room or in my bedroom and just no one's there and I can just sing, and it's just a moment where I can literally just like let everything go and just not think about things and not feel things and just sing. And so I think that's why I do it, mostly just let my inhibitions go and find my happy place, I guess. And then my other passion is writing. And I, when I was little, I wrote a lot of stories, but lately I've been writing more like creative nonfiction-y type things. I'm really interested in current events and true crime and things like that. So that's like kind of where my writing tends to go. And I try to kind of have a comedic voice. I'm kind of working right now to find that. So I have a blog that only has like one post on it. And so I probably won't like give the name out or anything, but that's like the voice I'm kind of trying to find, is something that can send a positive message and that's kind of what I want to do. I was listening to this man, his last name's Ballard, I can't think of his first name, but he is the founder of Project Underground Railroad, and I want to say it's Tim Ballard. He was giving a speech at UVU, and it was actually for the criminal justice students, because he basically has this private company that he's built that can be privately contracted by different areas of the government, like the police or the FBI, and different countries too, and they go and they help try to stop child sex trafficking around the world. But he was talking about how during the Civil Civil War, which was a different kind of slavery, Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. And it was just this piece of fiction that she wrote, but she was able to inspire a nation to fight the fight and to free the slaves. And so that's something that kind of stuck with me was he said, you know, maybe you're not getting in there in the trenches and fighting. And he was like, but we all have talents that we can use to make a difference and make a change in the world. And so, yeah, Tim Ballard. He is the CEO and founder of Project Underground Railroad. Yeah, the thing that he said that really stuck out to me was that we all have different talents that we can use to make a difference and make a change in the world. And I've always, since when I was really little, knew that I wanted to be able to do that through writing. So that's where more of my passion is, like, that's what I want to share with the world, and that's kind of the mark I want to leave on the world is through my writing. And so I hope to be able to connect with people through that and find common ground with people and be able to use my talents to make a change and make a difference. I don't know exactly with what yet, but hopefully I can keep writing things and somebody somewhere will connect with it.
Awesome. Do you have any, like, authors that are really, like, the kind of stuff you like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't write anything like this, but Shakespeare was the first author that I read that I really was, oh, wow, he's so cool. I was 13 and reading A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I got all the jokes, and I thought it was funny, and I was just this nerdy middle school girl that shouldn't have understood what was going on, but for some reason just really found this work of writing genius. And so that was the first time I remembered really connecting, and obviously the Harry Potter books. Authors that more recently that I've read are Amy Poehler came out with her autobiography, and I cannot remember the name, but I really love her voice, and I lean towards that more comedic voice, I guess. I kind of hope in my writing to have a sarcastic but serious tone to it. Yeah. There's this website called cracked.com, and they have a lot of writers on there who kind of take like a similar approach, I guess. They talk about serious stuff, but sometimes it's done in a more lighthearted way. One of the writers on there is Daniel O'Brien, and he's written a couple books, and I really like his voice as well. And it's kind of the same thing, like a creative nonfiction-y. He wrote one book called How to Fight the Presidents, and because he loves history, but it's like about the U.S. presidents, but, you know, like how to win in a fight against them.
Nice. Well, cool. Well, Talia, what makes you tick?
I think what makes me tick, I never like living my life, like when I get into a rut where I feel like I'm just going through the motions, I feel like I'm not doing anything with purpose. I think that is when I start to notice that I'm like more depressed or just not feeling it. And so I think when I feel like, so I guess what makes me tick is like feeling like I'm making a difference or feeling like I'm doing something with a purpose, or that I have a mission or a purpose, or if I'm helping someone, whatever it may be, but just something to give me a reason to keep on going and keep on living. And that usually involves being with people, helping people, something around that. Otherwise, I just kind of feel lost.
I can understand that. All right. Well, if people want to see your work or contact you or hire you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm trying to start a blog. If you follow my Twitter and Instagram are both at Talia_Samara. So that's TALIA_SAMARA. You can find updates on there. I'm on Facebook, but I won't be your friend if I don't know you. So and there's some other things in the works writing wise. So if you follow me on Instagram and Twitter, like I said, you'll be able to get updates on that and hopefully hear more in the coming months about some of the stuff I'm working on, which will be exciting. So yeah.
All right, fantastic. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
It's been fun.
It made me feel better when she was like, I watch a lot of YouTube. I was like, oh good, she's not gonna be like, well, you know, I did the special effects for Titanic and then I, you know.
Thanks for being on the show. It's been great having you.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Well, thank you.
It was fun.
Remember to give us a call at 801-SKETCH-1. So yeah, give us a call at 801-SKETCH-1. That's 801-753-8241. And remember, we're calling for gaming stories right now. 3 to 5 minute gaming stories. If you give us a good one, We'll feature it on the show. Any other found audio that you think would be interesting for the show, go ahead and send that to us. You can email us at pleasepodcast@gmail.com. And remember, our website is pleaseleaveamessage.simplecast.fm. And we're on iTunes. We're on TunedIn. Thanks for being with us.